I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump used the State of the Union address to make a final push for a wall along the southern U.S. border just days ahead of what he has warned could be another government shutdown.
Tonight, I am asking you to defend our very dangerous southern border out of love and devotion to our fellow citizens and to our country. No issue better illustrates the divide between America's working class and America's political class than illegal immigration.
Trump made his second State of the Union address with a new backdrop. For the first time, a Democratic Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi of California, was looking over Trump's shoulder as he spoke in the House chamber of the U.S. Capitol. Trump also officially announced a second summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Much work remains to be done, but my relationship with Kim Jong-un is a good one. Chairman Kim and I will meet again on February 27th and 28th in Vietnam.
Despite the fierce partisan disagreements, Trump's speech featured prominent calls for bipartisanship and unity, a sharp contrast in tone from the president's usual insults and name-calling on Twitter. The U.S. Senate voted overwhelmingly Tuesday to caution President Trump against swift U.S. withdrawals from Syria and Afghanistan. He revealed his decision to withdraw all U.S. forces from Syria in December, declaring that the U.S. had defeated Islamic State and no longer needed to deploy troops in Syria. The Senate vote came just hours before Trump was scheduled to deliver his nationally televised State of the Union address before the joint session of Congress. The Senate passed a bill also facilitates penalties against U.S. companies that boycott Israel, a move that sorely divided Democrats and was portrayed by some Republicans as a litmus test of support for the Jewish state. This is VOA News. U.S. prosecutors have issued a subpoena to President Trump's inaugural committee seeking documents related to its donors and spending, but the White House quickly distanced itself from the investigation. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says the State of the Union speech has not been overshadowed by federal prosecutors issuing a subpoena seeking documents from President Trump's committee.
Not at all. Look, I'm reading the same reports you are. This doesn't have anything to do with the White House. And I think the biggest focus and the thing that most Americans care about has nothing to do with the inaugural, and it has everything to do with what the path forward looks like.
The inaugural committee development was reported Monday by multiple news agencies citing either a copy of the subpoena or discussions with people familiar with the probe. Prosecutors have been investigating whether the committee misspent some of the $107 million it raised for events linked to Trump taking office in January of 2017. A new U.S. assessment of foreign interference in the 2018 congressional elections has concluded that outside meddling had no effect on the integrity and security of the voting systems, but the government didn't say whether foreign actors influenced the outcome of the election. The classified report by the U.S. Departments of Justice and Homeland Security found no evidence to date that any identified activities of a foreign government or foreign agent had a material impact on the integrity or security of election infrastructure or political campaign infrastructure used in the midterm elections. The joint report delivered to President Trump on Monday was prepared in response to an executive order he signed in September that declared foreign interference in U.S. elections a national emergency. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says that he hopes no foreign forces will enter Venezuela, saying the days of foreign intervention in Latin America are long ago gone. President Trump has said U.S. military force is an option for Venezuela, but has not specified under what circumstances he would send troops. Guterres says he has offered the good offices to both parties in Venezuela, saying he does not believe new elections would go well, but he said it is up to the Venezuelans to negotiate a solution there. Washington and European nations are echoing demands of Venezuelan protesters for socialist leader Nicolas Maduro to step down and give way for 35-year-old National Assembly head Juan Guaido to act as Venezuela's interim president while new elections are organized. Some Western moves against Maduro have been late in coming, some say. As Venezuela plunged deeper into chaos, the West held back from adopting forceful measures to put pressure on Maduro to end the repression there. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres sees a wind of hope in Africa.
Our own objective is to make Africa overcome its difficulties, to make Africa a continent of hope, to make Africa a continent of future, to make Africa a pillar of the world in which we live, not seen as a problem, but seen as an opportunity.
DRC President Félix Tshisekedi makes his first official trip abroad in Angola. The UN appealed for $202 million to assist vulnerable people in Libya. We'll tell you the countries that are prone to conflicts in 2019. And a court in Guinea sentences 19 people to stiff jail terms for the murder of the former director of that country's treasury.
We are happy as a government to see that the most important of those cases has find a solution by the condemnation of people that were judged guilty by the justice of committed those crimes.
Amara Sampare is Guinea's Minister of Information. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Donald Trump delivered his second State of the Union speech Tuesday night to a new class of Congress that has a record number of minorities and women. The speech came a week later than the originally scheduled date of January 29th, after Speaker of the House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi blocked the president from delivering his address until the government was reopened. Mr. Trump used his address to make a final push for a wall along the southern U.S. border, just days ahead of what he has warned could be another government shutdown.
Now, Republicans and Democrats must join forces again to confront an urgent national crisis. Congress has 10 days left to pass a bill that will fund our government, protect our homeland, and secure our very dangerous southern border. Now is the time for Congress to show the world that America is committed to ending illegal immigration and putting the ruthless coyotes, cartels, drug dealers, and human traffickers out of business. As we speak, large organized caravans are on the march to the United States. We have just heard that Mexican cities, in order to remove the illegal immigrants from their communities, are getting trucks and buses to bring them up to our country in areas where there is little border protection. I have ordered another 3,750 troops to our southern border to prepare for this tremendous onslaught. This is a moral issue. The lawless state of our southern border is a threat to the safety, security, and financial well-being of all America. We have a moral duty to create an immigration system that protects the lives and jobs of our citizens. This includes our obligation to the millions of immigrants living here today who followed the rules and respected our laws. Legal immigrants enrich our nation and strengthen our society. I want people to come into our country in the largest numbers ever, but they have to come in legally.
That was U.S. President Donald Trump delivering his second State of the Union speech Tuesday night. The Congress seems unlikely to give Mr. Trump his wall. The Democratic response to the president's address was delivered by Stacey Abrams, a former Georgia state lawmaker who is seen as a rising star in the Democratic Party. She criticized the government shutdown as a stunt engineered by President Trump. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres travels to Addis Ababa this week for the African Union Summit. He sat down with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir ahead of his trip. Mr. Guterres says cooperation between the world body and the African Union has substantially improved. He expressed optimism that the continent is making progress on some of its biggest challenges.
Africa is facing no shortage of conflicts or challenges, either man-made or natural. But UN Chief Guterres believes reinvigorated cooperation between the world body and African Union can play a significant role in helping the continent surmount them.
Our own objective is to make Africa overcome its difficulties, to make Africa a continent of hope, to make Africa a continent of future, to make Africa a pillar of the world in which we live, not seen as a problem, but seen as an opportunity.
One recent challenge was the presidential election in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The results were disputed, and the man many believe came in a distant second was inaugurated as president. But the handover of power went off peacefully in that country for the first time in 60 years. Guterres says all parties in the DRC should now work to move the country forward.
But we consider that what's important now, after the elections with the new government, is to create the conditions for inclusive dialogue among all parties and to make sure that we have a transition of power that allows for the country to move ahead.
Across the continent, Guterres said the United Nations is committed to a surge in diplomacy for peace to complement the AU's push to end conflict on the continent by 2020. He noted progress implementing the peace deal between rivals Salva Kiir and Riek Machar in South Sudan, and this week's agreement between the government of the Central African Republic and several armed groups. He also welcomed the recent reconciliation between Ethiopia and Eritrea as an important example of the potential of diplomacy.
We see in many other areas movement in the right direction, and we are totally committed to work together, African Union and the African sub-regional organizations, to support this wind of hope to make sure that the African continent is able to achieve its goal to end conflicts by 2020.
When the UN chief travels to Addis Ababa this week, he will be taking a message of the UN's commitment to Africa's peace, stability, and development. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi on Tuesday made his first official trip abroad since his inauguration last month. He visited neighboring Angola at the invitation of President João Lourenço. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai says the two leaders discussed security issues, including the deportation of about 400,000 Congolese by the Angolan government.
Mr. Felix Tshisekedi made his very first trip abroad to Luanda, Angola, where he met President João Lourenço Tuesday morning. Mr. Tshisekedi starts to reaffirm the support and the solidarity of the Angolan people and the Angolan government to the DRC government and people. But apart from the formal statements, two main issues were on table. First and foremost, security concerns, because as everybody knows, Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo share a long border with a lot of problems around the border, and also are in a region, as President João Lourenço underlines, the Great Lakes region, of great turbulences, great conflicts. These were the main concerns that Mr. Tshisekedi has been discussing with the President João Lourenço.
Mario, as you know, many Congolese are fleeing to Angola because of the situation in the Kasai province. But just last year, the Angolan government began to deport Congolese from Angola. Did the two leaders talk about this?
Yes, of course. In the press conference after the meeting, Mr. Tshisekedi said that he has been talking with President João Lourenço, and he expected that the deported Congolese will be treated in the near future with a more, and I quote, humanitarian approach. Mr. Tshisekedi admits that a lot of illegal Congolese migrants has been in Angola due to unemployment and the lack of purposes in the DRC, but he said that he have the guarantees from President João Lourenço that in the future, these people will be treated in a more humanitarian way. Mr. Tshisekedi also adds that he and the incoming government, I will say, are aware of the tensions in the east part of DRC. As you know, in the past, there has been a lot of ethnic troubles around, and this also was one of the questions that Mr. Tshisekedi has been discussing with President João Lourenço. Mr. Tshisekedi invites the president to come to Kinshasa in the near future when the Joint Commission will meet. But I also would like to add that Mr. Tshisekedi has been talking about the internal situations of the DRC.
First of all, Mr. Tshisekedi went to Angola at the time that his election is being refuted by Mr. Martin Fayulu. Did he talk to the Angolan leader in terms of what the SADC can do to bring about some understanding between Mr. Tshisekedi and Mr. Fayulu?
Yes, Mr. Tshisekedi said that he met recently in Kinshasa the opposition leader, Mr. Martin Fayulu, giving him assurances of freedom of expression, freedom of speech. Mr. Tshisekedi underlined that in the last Saturday, there was even a public meeting of Fayulu's party, which was peaceful, without any trouble with the police. Mr. Tshisekedi gave assurances to President João Lourenço that in reality there was the very first peaceful political transition in the DRC. He promises to continue the fight to maintain democratic state in the DRC, giving assurances to opposition parties, civil liberties, and human rights.
Mario, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you. You're always kind. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, James.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai speaking with us from the Angolan capital, Luanda. Today's Wednesday, February 6th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. The United Nations, together with the internationally recognized government of National Accord in Libya, are appealing for more than $200 million to provide life-saving assistance to 550,000 vulnerable people, nearly half of them children. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the appeal in Geneva.
The United Nations reports more than 823,000 people across Libya, including a quarter of a million children, are in need of humanitarian assistance. After 7 years of instability, it says thousands of families are unable to afford food, water, and basic household items. Among the needy are internally displaced people, those affected by conflict, and host communities. Spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Laerke, says some of the most vulnerable are refugees and migrants who face grave human rights violations and abuse in this lawless country.
The majority of people in need are in highly populated urban areas in the western and eastern regions of Libya. However, people with the most critical and severe needs are in the coastal area of Sirte and in the southern parts of the country where access is difficult due to instability.
There's been a power vacuum in Libya since 2011, when the country's dictator, Muammar Gaddafi, was toppled. The country splintered into two rival political and military factions in 2014. UN aid agencies have access to more than 500,000 people in need of humanitarian assistance who are living under the control of the international recognized government in the capital, Tripoli. However, it is unable to reach hundreds of thousands of people living in dire straits in Sirte and southern coastal areas. This because they are ruled by the opposing government, which has its seat in the eastern city of Tobruk. OCHA spokesman Laerke says priority needs include food, special nutrition for malnourished children, health, and education. He says the provision of water and sanitation in overcrowded and unsanitary detention centers is critical. He says education support is planned for the thousands of children and adolescents whose education has been disrupted. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The government of Guinea has reiterated its commitment to fight impunity in all its forms by prosecuting all alleged criminals regardless of their socioeconomic and political status. This came after a Guinean court on Tuesday sentenced 19 people to stiff jail terms for the murder of the former director of that country's treasury. Amara Sampari is Guinea's Minister of Information.
What happened is just some cases that was introduced to the justice.
since several years for some of them. And we are happy as a government to see that the most important of those cases has find a solution by the condemnation of people that were judged guilty by the justice of committed those crimes, as the assassination of Mrs. Boaro, which has really shocked the entire population of Conakry and Guinea, and also the condemnation of one captain of the police services, which has used weapons during demonstrations.
Why did it take this long to come to this decision by the court? 2012, I mean, why did it take this long?
No, it's not only 2012. I mean, different offers, some of them are still under instruction to the court. But as you know, criminal affairs take quite a long time to get an issue because it's investigation conducted against X, because we don't know who is clearly involved in the drama. It takes a long time. As you can see in France or other Western countries, some criminal affairs can take years before the justice can find a guilty person to put in jail.
I know this has to do with murder, but also I think it has some corruption implication, especially the assassination of Aissatou Boaro. What does it have to say about the fight against corruption also?
The fight against corruption has been demonstrated a few days before, because the president has just removed the head of the Lonagi. Lonagi is the company in charge of lottery in Guinea. And after an investigation conducted by the Inspection Générale d'État, it was shown that the head of the Lonagi was involved in bad governance habits. The corruption and the criminality is both fought by this government, and justice will take time to solve the issues. But the thing that we have to keep in mind here is that at the end, the justice will speak.
So your government is touting this or saying this as the fight against impunity?
Exactly. Because as you can see in the decisions that was made by justice, two captains, one from the police services, one from the gendarmerie, were all condemned by the tribunal. That shown that the government is ready to fight against impunity.
The sentencing for 10 years of Captain Kale Diallo, yeah, for the unauthorized use of firearm at an opposition demonstration. What does this say here, yeah, about your government's commitment to, say, freedom of speech, freedom to gather, freedom to express one's political view?
What is shown here in this decision is that the government has given strict instruction to the police services to not use weapons against demonstrators. So once, if it is proven that a police officer has used weapons against demonstrators, it has to be judged as a normal citizen, and the decision taken by justice has to be applied, because the government made the decision to not use a lethal weapon against demonstrators. This instruction has been given to every person that will intervene into the demonstrations or into maintain calm in the city. So if one officer, it can be a gendarme, it can be a police, it can be any other officers responsible of keeping the calm in the city, it will be judged as a normal citizen.
Mr. Sompare, thank you very much for speaking with us again. It's so nice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bade.
Amara Sompare is Guinea's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. The International Crisis Group has published a list of countries to watch for ongoing conflict in 2019. And the Central African Republic is on the list as armed groups continue to inflict violence throughout the country. Richard Moncrief is the International Crisis Group's Central Africa Project Director. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the country's current struggles and recent meetings in Sudan to address talks among key actors.
This year is particularly key, I think, for two reasons. Firstly, is that there's a further round of talks in Khartoum between armed groups and the government. And frankly, what happens at the talks is not so important as what happens afterwards. And this has to be the year when commitments made at talks outside the country actually bear fruit in country. And that's going to require some real enforcement, some real guarantees. And in particular, it's going to require Central African Republic's neighbours to the north, that's Chad and Sudan, who have at least some ties to some of the bigger armed groups in country, act to pull those armed groups back, accept some fighters returning to their countries, and generally act in a more helpful way than they have done up to now. Final point concerning 2019 is that towards the end of the year, we're going to be approaching election season. Elections aren't until the end of 2020, but you can already see manoeuvring within the government concerning elections, and that's going to impact on the government's relations with external actors as well.
This crisis has been ongoing for many years now. What's being done differently? It kind of feels like this horrible deja vu sometimes over and over again, these same groups fighting, these same groups going and having talks, and nobody honoring anything, basically.
I think what you said is right. I think that there's a risk of Groundhog Day in Central African Republic as armed groups go to talks outside the country, receive their per diems, sign up to agreements after a bit of pressure, and then they're either unwilling or indeed in some cases unable to impose the terms of those agreements on the ground, on their kind of mid-level commanders on the ground. We've seen that happen time and time again. And that's why I think it's very, very important to underline that the what is agreed on paper in Khartoum is far less important than the backroom negotiations and conversations that need to be had between Central African Republic, Sudan, and Chad. Those are the three key actors in this, the key international actors. In order to have talks and come to agreements about stopping support for armed groups, they'll need support for that. They'll need the involvement of the AU and the involvement of other actors.
You're mentioning Sudan and Chad's important role in this, but obviously those two countries also have their own issues, Sudan especially right now. But
well, Sudan is going through a major political crisis, and Chad shares many characteristics with Sudan, including a leader who's been in power for more than 20 years in both cases, and also a severe economic crisis that's having a big impact on people's living standards. However, despite these problems, both countries could do some fairly simple things to limit their support to armed groups in Central African Republic, and also to encourage those armed groups to disarm. In particular, I'm thinking of two things. Firstly, is to accept and come to an agreement with Central African Republic over the repatriation of foreign fighters in Central African Republic.
That was Richard Moncrief, Central Africa Project Director for the International Crisis Group. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Nairobi, Kenya. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said on Tuesday that there has been a quantum leap in relations between the world body and the African Union, and he hopes this can translate into progress on some of the continent's biggest challenges. He pointed to Tuesday's breakthrough on the Central African Republic. The government and 14 armed groups initiate a deal to end 5 years of fighting during the peace talks in Sudan. Zambia's profitable copper mining industry is making its citizens poorer, and explosive new report by a Southern African research organization says. The report by Southern African Research Watch examined conditions in the community around one mine in northwestern Zambia, where they say they found the vast wealth is not being spread to the surrounding community. And this situation, they say, is a tale told across mineral-rich communities in Africa. And that is it for this Wednesday, February 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Botti in Washington, as well as our engineer John Ellison. I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Afro Beats, Gong, Afro Zouk, New Traditional. This Sunday, turn it all on and enjoy the best of Africa. Hello, everyone. I'm Heather Maxwell. Music Time in Africa is the one weekend show you don't want to miss. Join me this Sunday for amazing music from 10 different African countries,
plus a top five feature of Northern Nigeria's best songs, an interview with Ugandan singer Susan Karanen.
I'm an Alur woman, that is from the northwestern part of Uganda.
They call you the Alur Queen.
Yes.
And Song of the Week. Turn it all on this Sunday on Music Time in Africa, 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time.